Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. So, you know, one of the hot topics going on right now is the infrastructure bill. Wanted to kind of get a little insight in terms of the impact locally, what we should be paying attention to as this bill is being bantered about, and what's going on in terms of our infrastructure plans locally. So gracing us with his presence today is the Executive Director of Metro Plan Orlando, Mr. Gary Huttman. How you doing, sir? Good morning.
I'm doing fine, Gretchen. Thanks. How are you?
Doing well, and thank you for taking the time out. I know you're a busy man because there's a lot going on in Orlando when it comes to infrastructure. So let's get started. Tell me a little bit about what you're looking at as this infrastructure bill is being bantered about.
Well, it's I don't know how much you or your listeners are familiar with the federal legislation, but there's so much that's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and so many different organizations looking at the different bills, and there are a number of them. But what it's all sort of boiled down to is President Biden's, what he referred to as his American Jobs Plan. And then the United States Senate has come up with their version of a reauthorization. And so what the Senate is doing right now is looking at, they were in some, this bipartisan group of senators were in some negotiations with the president, and they came to some agreement on his American Jobs Plan. And what's going on now and the debates going on are how they can merge portions of the American Jobs Plan with the Senate's version of the transportation reauthorization. Because, and one of the reasons that that's so critical is because the current federal bill was extended last year, but that extension expires on September 30th of this year. So it's very important that they come to agreement on the funding and the bill language and how the infrastructure is going to be paid for over the 5 year period, five or eight, whatever they come up with. So that's very critical, and it's hugely important on us in Central Florida, given our needs and the plan that we just developed and shortfalls that we're finding in the plan in order to fund certain major improvements.
So, I mean, what are when you say the shortfalls that you're finding, what are the major shortfalls that you are finding, and what needs to be done in order to shore that up?
Well, the Metro Plan Orlando is the MPO, the federally designated metropolitan planning organization for the three county region of Orange, Seminole, and Osceola counties, and so we serve a population of about 2.1 million people. During normal times, we like to refer to the 75 million visitors, and that's a 2018 number, that visited Central Florida, and what that has, the impact that has on us as a region. And, you know, folks tell us that when you look into those tourism numbers, that on any given day, we may have anywhere between, you know, 300,000 and 500,000 guests in our region using our streets, using the transit system, using taxis, Ubers, whatever that is, however they choose to get around. So it's really transportation is just key to the success of a region like ours. But anyway, we are the MPO, and we're required to develop every 5 years a new long-range transportation plan that looks out into the future at least 20 years. And so the MetroPlan Board just adopted in December of last year a new kind of vision for the region that goes to the year 2045. And, of course, we got all kinds of things that, you know, are potential disruptors to the way we get around and do our business. And technology is just making such advances that it's really hard to keep up with. But
right.
our current plan has a project list in it that, you know, we believe is affordable under current revenue streams of about $27 billion worth of projects. And it's split almost equally between state and federal and local funds and then tolls, you know, tolls in Central Florida. Whether you like them or not, they're very important to how we get around. Can you just imagine getting around Orlando if you didn't have the 408 or the beach line or the 429? It'd be very difficult. So they do play a very important role. But in developing the plan and the plan that the MetroPlan Board adopted, there are still some funding shortfalls of somewhere around $16 billion or so of a shortfall over that period of time, and that's for different modes. You know, transit has a shortfall, highways has a shortfall, and other modes as well. But of course, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say that the importance of the federal transportation bill, particularly now, and what they're talking about, is because it brings so much additional revenue to throughout the United States, and Central Florida will certainly get its share of that. But that would certainly help to fund some of those what we now see as unfunded needs.
Let me ask you a question about tolls, because I know my husband, for one, he comes from a place where, you know, they have a lot of highway, but they have a lot of mass transit too. And he talks about how, you know, getting around up where he's from without the tolls. And the fact that I've heard people talk about, well, the 408 was originally just the tolls were supposed to be temporary. What happened with that? Why has that changed? And why is there such a big need for the tolls? And why aren't there other means of income, or can there be other means of income to fund the infrastructure that we need?
Well, currently and historically, transportation improvements have been funded with gas tax revenue. And for, you know, I've been doing this work for a number of years, and I don't think that there's ever been a time where we've not recognized that gas tax revenue is a dwindling revenue stream for transportation improvements. And that's caused by, you know, things that we all like and enjoy, like having better gas mileage in our vehicles, or maybe you drive a hybrid vehicle and so you don't use quite as much gas, and now people are driving electric vehicles so they're not using quite as much gas. And
mm-hmm.
So those receipts from gas tax revenue are just not covering the cost. And the federal gas tax has not been increased since 1993. So, you know, the buying power of that gas tax money has really been affected by that. So as far as the tolls on the 408 and that they were to have gone away, you know, we are not a tolling agency, but the tolls, they have bond covenants and people that invest in make those investments and have to get a return. So that money, the toll money, is used to maintain the toll facilities and to build new facilities. So, you know, I don't know that there will ever be an end. You know, once you accept tolling, I think it would be difficult to get by without it. And, you know, we don't get involved in the negotiation of those bond covenants and the agreements, but it all has to do with paying back the revenue to the people that make the investments. But toll roads are, they really are very important. And you know, and recently the Florida legislature made some changes so that our local tolling agency, the Central Florida Expressway Authority, is now able to look at multimodal improvements within their along their corridors, you know, that they operate, which means, you know, that they can provide for, let's say, express bus service or so between maybe the UCF main campus, say, in downtown Orlando, the downtown campus. So that's a big step forward when we're talking about multimodal improvements.
Okay. So now, when we're watching what's going on with the infrastructure bill, and getting back to that a little bit, what is it that the average, I guess, consumer should be made aware of or looking for in, and how do they maybe have some, is there any way at this stage or whatever, at this point, to have any input into what's going on, maybe talking to our representatives in Washington? Is there anything that can be done? And I guess from your professional point of view, if there were any major changes that you would like to see in the bill from what you know about it, what would they be? And would they be specific to Florida, or would they be, you know, to the bill as a whole?
Well, I'm going to speak about some things. See, the what's called the House of Representatives, the Congress, has a Transportation and Infrastructure Committee that worked on a bill from the House side of the federal mm-hmm. government, and that's referred to as the INVEST Act, and that's something that they brought forward. And folks such as myself and others across the country were looking very favorably on that because the INVEST Act has a little bit more money associated with it, but it also did some other things. It had more money for transit and for communities like Orlando and other urban areas to beef up their transit systems, and so that's very important for us. And that was a very very positive piece of that INVEST Act. And then, of course, over the past couple of months, we've been working very hard with our local representatives, Congresswoman Demings, Congresswoman Murphy, Congressman Soto, and their offices in submitting applications for earmarks. You know, earmarks used to be popular, or at least they used to exist, and then they went away, but they were on the verge of coming back. And so we submitted a number of projects that were very popular locally to be congressional earmarks, and they were made. They made it into the Invest Act. So if that act is not moving forward, then we're losing out potentially on that list of projects unless they can negotiate to get them in the Senate version of the bill. The Invest Act also included more federal assistance for our local projects, what we refer to as projects that are off of the state highway system. And these are projects like, you know, Corinne Drive locally is a project that would receive that money. Neptune Road is a big project in Osceola County that would receive that type of money. So we're hoping that at least bits and pieces of that Invest Act through negotiation can work their way into the Senate version of the reauthorization bill. But, you know, I say that in support of the Invest Act. Now, what the Senate is debating right now is kind of a merger of the bipartisan infrastructure framework and the Senate bill, and it includes a significant bump up in total funds over a five-year period of time, nearly a 50% increase in funds, and so you know that's really critical. You know, and you can always, you know, contact senators, the U.S. senators, Senator Scott, Senator Rubio, Congress, offices of our local representatives in Congress. You know, anyone can contact them or their assistants. You don't actually need to speak to the elected official and express your concern over transportation funding, whether you're for increased funding or if you see a problem with it. But that would be the route for your listeners to take.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Gary Huttman of MetroPlan Orlando. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking infrastructure with Gary Huttman of MetroPlan Orlando. The number, if you have questions, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. So now I know that pre-COVID-19, Mayor Jerry Demings of Orange County had been going around in the community talking about his transportation plan and different ideas he had, and wanted to get feedback from the residents. And a lot of what he was trying to do, I guess, got put on hold or postponed or what. What kind of impact has COVID had really in the planning of infrastructure here in Central Florida?
Well, the full impact of it, I think, is yet to be determined. You know, and the folks that I meet with regularly and talk about the impact, you know, it ranges from, traffic numbers being down, although I think they're well on their way back. It feels very much like that. The revenue from to the extent that people are driving less, the revenue will be impacted by that. You know, people not being able to get to their jobs, people changing their work habits. In our region in Central Florida, the work trips during normal times and pre-COVID, work trips were really only a relatively small part of the daily traffic on the road, about 15% or so, which is low compared to most regions. And the reason for that is because of our economy being so heavily tourism-based. And many of those folks work irregular kind of hours, and so they're not on the road necessarily during what we call the peak hours. I don't know about the number of people that telework. I think that's going to increase, those who have been teleworking during the pandemic. You know, some of them will continue to do that, and different agencies around the country, us included, are considering what the new work life is going to be. So people, you know, maybe doing more work remotely and not being on the road. And then there may be some people that chose to take transit that pre-COVID that are now a little bit nervous about it. Although I can tell you that I'm a regular SunRail passenger, and SunRail is just doing an outstanding job of making people feel comfortable. You know, they've increased the number of people that go throughout the trains and clean them constantly, and it just really gives you a comfort level when you're as a passenger. And then of course on SunRail you still have to wear masks on public transportation. But I think we'll be looking at the impacts of this event for a number of years to come, and also feeling the impact of it as well.
Okay, I do have a question, because you were talking about people being on the road, and I know a lot of people are working from home, but given the fact that we are a tourist mecca, so to speak, and tourism is picking back up, it looks very doubtful that even the teleconferencing and whatnot are going to really impact us in the way it may impact other places, because we have people that still need to get to the hotels and restaurants to service them, and then we still need to get people from the airports and the train stations and the bus stations and so on and so forth. So I see where our roads are still going to remain pretty clogged up. Plus, with the impact of more people moving in this area and more places, especially multi-family housing being built in this area, I'm just wondering, I know we have, for example, the I-4 Ultimate project going on right now, but I'm just wondering if, you know, we're going to end up doing with another phase of something like that.
Another phase of the I-4 project?
Yes. I mean, you know, something to handle the increase. Because, like you're saying, we're seeing traffic now going back almost to pre-COVID levels. And unfortunately, on top of that, I'm seeing crazier drivers out there who I think don't realize that we're back into pre-COVID levels. The roads aren't as free as they think. How are we going to handle that? Because I don't think it's, going to lighten up anymore. It looks like to me it's going to get worse. And, I mean, for example, you talk about you use SunRail, which, you know, is great, and I know it works for some people, but in where I am, it takes me a drive to just get to SunRail before I could even use it, and it would have to go somewhere that I need it to go to, and I don't even see that. So, I know you talked about plans ranging into 2045. What kind of plans are there at this point that you could tell us about that might handle some of that?
Well, first of all, you're spot on with your observation about traffic is increasing and the speed of traffic. I think that's just, to me, that's just so noticeable. You know, and I think people got used to the roads, particularly I-4, during the early days of COVID when, you know, there just weren't many people on the roads, and so people increased their speeds, and now it just feels like if you're doing the speed limit on the interstate, you're an annoyance to people. And you have to go much faster than the speed limit in order to just keep up with traffic. And you know, that's a big cause of some of the crashes that are occurring on the interstate is because of those high speeds. You're also right about the number of people that are still coming here, whether they're coming moving here or they're coming here to visit. You know, traffic is not going to go away, and we had, that was a blip, you know, but the traffic is coming back, and it's back at those levels those levels of pre-COVID. You know, we did, as part of our planning effort, a survey, and it's something that we do typically every couple of years because we want to just kind of engage the public and find out what's important to them, you know, how they like to move around. And our most recent effort, in fact, it's just been completed and was presented to the MetroPlan board at their July meeting, but it involved a survey of just over 3,000 individuals, and that was through a combination of an online panel and then a public survey, and it represented very much our region as far as a breakdown on the distribution of our region. For example, 61% of the folks surveyed were from Orange County, 22% represented Seminole County, and the remainder for Osceola, would that be about 17% or so? And, you know, we find consistently that the public wants to have more transit service. They want to, and you mentioned SunRail, it doesn't work for you. It doesn't work, you know, for a lot of people. It's good for those who it does work for. And so people want more connections to it, you know, and so from the beginning, when SunRail first began, you know, it was a matter of managing expectations that it wasn't going to work for everybody, and it was just the beginning of what people hope is a system of transit facilities throughout the region. So now we're looking at other options and how we can improve that. But people want, you know, they want to be able to go travel east-west on something similar to SunRail and connect with SunRail and get to where they need to go. There probably needs to be more north-south connections. But a number of studies have been done in our region for, you know, connecting the airport up to Altamont Springs, connecting the airport to the convention center, A premium-type transit between Orlando and Apopka has been studied. One of my favorites has always been the State Road 50 study that goes essentially from the study did, went from looking at the Lake Orange County line out to the University of Central Florida main campus. And, of course, those projects are, well, that's what the public says that they want. When you do those studies, they're very expensive to do, not only to build them and get them up and running, but if they're not autonomous, let's say, then you have fairly high operating costs for those systems. But that's what the people want, you know, we just need to find a way to fund them. And you mentioned Mayor Deming's initiative for the sales tax, and that would have gone a long way. And it's very unfortunate that, you know, that we ended up with a pandemic, and it didn't make sense to go forward with it at the time, but to put it on hold, I think that was a wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it has a way of generating a very sustainable revenue stream. And not only that, but it's, you know, people, and this comes out in our survey, you know, when we talk about funding, is being supportive of ways that you can raise revenue without it costing local people, you know, without the burden being entirely on the local residents. And certainly with our economy and the number of tourists that we have coming to Central Florida, a sales tax, a lot of the sales tax revenue is generated from people that are visiting us. And so from a local, you know, taxpayer and resident standpoint, that's very positive. But that 1 cent sales tax would go a long way, you know, in helping to fund transportation needs. The estimated revenue from that, I think, was somewhere close to $600 million a year, which is huge. So.
We're here with Gary Huttner of Metroplan Orlando talking about infrastructure, particularly in Central Florida, a hot topic these days with the bill being discussed in Washington. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on KHAM Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking infrastructure issues with Gary Huttman, who's with Metroplan Orlando. And the number, if you have questions, is 516-387-1944. I wanted to ask you, because of the fact that Metroplan Orlando is a combination of entities from Orange, Osceola, and Seminole, I know there are probably, you know, and there's a lot of, I guess, intermixing back and forth between working and shopping and traveling between the three counties. But I'm sure that each of the counties has topics, you know, issues that are unique to them. How does Metroplan Orlando manage dealing with that?
Well, historically, we have a very good record of, you know, regional cooperation. And you're right, there are different needs by jurisdiction. Right now, for example, Osceola County has a lot of road building going on to catch up because they had such and continue to have such high growth and just trying to catch up with that. Orange County's needs are a little bit different because many of the facilities in Orange County are as built out as we want to make them. You know, typically urban areas don't want to build beyond, you know, 3 lanes in each direction is pretty much a maximum number of lanes. And even at that, it becomes so unfriendly to people that are walking or biking. And then Seminole County, you know, its road system is pretty mature also. So we handle that by developing a priority list of projects that we help our local partners, the counties and the cities in each of the counties, to fund with the federal money that comes to MetroPlan Orlando and the MetroPlan Board controls. That is, we give the DOT a list of projects that we want them to fund with that pot of money. And every few years or so, the MetroPlan Board looks at how that money is distributed among things like transit or bicycle facilities and sidewalks, complete streets kind of projects, which is a way to sort of bring transportation down to a street level and to an individual level when you're on the street. And it's very popular right now to talk about complete streets and to do those types of projects. But we work through, you know, it's a very extensive process that we go through with our committees and a lot of negotiation. But with the federal transportation bills always spell out how we need to do our work in order to continue to receive federal money. We go through a certification process every 4 years with the federal government to make sure we're doing things appropriately and doing the proper accounting and everything. And recently, you know, we do now have to prioritize our projects based on what they refer to as performance measures and performance targets. And that's new to the region. And so, you know, kind of boiling it all down, it's funding the type of projects that we as a region say is important to us. So if we say that safety is important to us, the federal government wants to know, well, where are your investments? You know, if you're saying it's important to you, where are the investments and how are you moving the needle to make things safer through the money that we're giving you, through this federal money that we're giving you? And it's not just safety. It's also there are a number of performance measures. Safety happens to be a very big one because, you know, Central Florida has a reputation of being an unsafe area for pedestrians and bicyclists. But, you know, generally there's a lot of give and take on our committees and as well as the board, and recognizing that if one jurisdiction doesn't get theirs this year, then, you know, they'll probably be in line for it the next time that some funding comes our way. So we just kind of balance it out that way. But there's really a very cooperative spirit among the board members and even the staff from the jurisdictions that come here to kind of vet everything that goes to the board. So it's very cooperative.
That's good to hear, really good. One of the things you mentioned in your conversation, we talk about, we don't have the best reputation in terms of being pedestrian friendly. So, and I guess with our area growing and stuff like that, I think we do kind of want to be more bike-friendly and pedestrian-friendly, if for not any other reason, just to keep everybody more physically fit and reduce the pollution that will happen in this area if we don't try to do things like, I guess, a few more walkable neighborhoods. Now, I'm kind of one of those people that I'm not a city person. I guess I'm more of a burb person still. But it would be nice to be able to feel like I could safely bike or walk to some places. So And the problem that I'm seeing in some cases, like, for example, just one example, in part of downtown Orlando, getting around, it's pretty landlocked, not just for pedestrians and bicycles, but even for cars. There's a good portion of downtown Orlando that's just two lanes each way. So how do you deal with something like that?
So are you suggesting that two lanes each way is just not enough to move around, or it creates a dangerous situation for pedestrians?
Both.
Both.
I'm saying both.
Well,
so,
you know,
maybe that's not the case.
You know, one of the you always have to be willing to take a look at how you've done things in the past and be honest with yourself. If the way you used to do things really didn't turn out so well, and
mm-hmm.
and for many years throughout my career, you know, folks in this business were charged with moving as many cars as they could as quickly as they could.
Right.
And you know, that, and we all thought we were doing a great job, and we were. But now that's all done, and people are realizing the impact of that on walking and bicycling and those sorts of things, you know, we're going back and retrofitting some of those corridors
mm-hmm.
to be more pedestrian friendly, to be, and that's what we call complete streets. You know, I think that with the pandemic, I think we might be missing a really great opportunity for promoting transportation, what we call active transportation, walking, biking, those kind of things, because the pandemic, you know, we're learning that underlying health conditions are important. Right, and you know, transportation can contribute to a healthier lifestyle, or it can help to enable that, or it can do just the opposite. And when we build and focus too much on just moving cars on six-lane roads at 45 miles an hour or faster, we're not doing anything to promote public health of our residents.
Okay. So, I do understand that. Like I said, I'm one of those people, it's like, get me from point A to point B as quickly as possible with no interruptions, and let me do it in my own car so I don't have to necessarily worry about wearing a mask and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, I guess I'm a little selfish that way, unfortunately, which I need to work on. But also, I'm in a business, too, other than the podcast, that requires me to use my own transportation in order to work. So I guess I shouldn't be just speaking for me, but I guess I need to speak for other people here, too. The problem that I see with, I guess, trying to make a walkable community is that you have to have businesses that are willing to locate in those communities. And we have some communities, unfortunately, that particularly, I would say, low-income and minority communities, where there are not enough businesses or certain businesses that don't locate in those communities, and therefore people from those communities have to go outside of their communities in order to get, let's say, affordable gas, decent groceries, you know, especially fresh fruits and vegetables, because that's where those are the areas that where we're having the food deserts and stuff like that. So until we get businesses to support those communities a little bit better, we're going to still, I think, have those transportation issues, correct?
Well, you know, it all takes time, and accessibility, you know, is very important. And you used an example of healthy food. Health, getting access to health care is important. And you're right. I mean, the people that are in business and that would serve those areas, service those areas, you know, they want to make a profit. And if they don't see that they can make a profit, then there's not a whole lot of incentive for them to locate a business in those areas. So it's really a difficult task to kind of change the ship, you know, redirect the ship. But that's what we're challenged with right now, because, like I mentioned just a few minutes ago, years ago, the way we did our business was to build roads and to move cars through areas,
right,
out to the suburbs, you know, and I'm not, I mean, the suburbs are necessary, you know. Not everybody wants to live in downtown areas, and it's not right for everybody. Some people want to be further away, and that all makes sense. It also makes sense that we all want to be in our cars and listening to our songs or just having quiet time. So what we have to do is just kind of balance all of that out. But I got to tell you, mm-hmm. you know, right now there really is a movement to kind of soften things up. And not focus so much on cars, and accept more congestion, like because the roads are congested, maybe we just have to live with that a little bit and be a little bit more tolerant of it rather than trying to build our way out of it, and that's just part of kind of growing up as a city, and then, you know, as you do that, then I think more people will kind of gravitate toward other modes, you know, getting around on a scooter or a bicycle or walking or whatever. But it's just all part of maturing as an urban area, too.
Okay, so let me throw this scenario at you because it's the one that I know. And but I know there are other people that are doing it, too. My husband commutes to work. We live in Northwest Orange County, and he works in Southeast Orange County. Okay, so that's a bit diagonal all the way across the county. He has coworkers that come in from, like, D-Land and Deltona, too. So, I mean, you know, there's all people coming from all directions to this one spot. We were down one car last week, and I had to take him to work, 22 miles one way and back. So that's commuting, take him to work, come back, pick him up, come back, 88 miles. Okay. Now, the thing about, the reason I'm saying that, and that's 4 hours also out of a day. Now, in some ways, it was nice because we got a chance to spend time together and talk, but let's just say I wasn't in the car. He's alone and everything. He's, you know, doing this commute back and forth. That's a lot of time on the road just driving.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
And not doing other things like spending quality time at home or spending quality time supporting local businesses by shopping or dining out or whatever the case may be. Or just relaxing. So I know you talk about, we have to tolerate the congestion, but then don't we at the same time, you know, I'm just putting this out there, don't we at the same time sacrifice other things in the process?
Yeah. I mean, there are trade-offs, you know, and a trade-off for, you know, you want to believe that where you choose to live, you're doing that for reasons that make sense to you. It might be that housing, you can get more house for the same amount of money,
mm-hmm.
and the cost of doing that is time on the road, and so you need to be willing to pay that cost, you know. And there's a lot of I mentioned at the beginning about technology changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of discussion about what are people, how are people really going to react when we are using on a regular basis autonomous vehicles, because they are coming.
Mm-hmm.
And there will come a time, you know, there will come a time when that the fleet that's on the road will be replaced. And you know, not sure when that is, although it's we're getting closer to it. And then but the discussion is, what is that going to do to our transportation system? You know, is it simply going to have, are people going to be willing to have hour-long commutes because they can do other things while they're on the road? You know, that's one kind of one school of thought. Then what happens when the person gets to their destination? Does the car sit parked all day in the parking lot, or does it go back home,
right,
and pick you up and take you where you need to go?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some thinking that autonomous vehicles may add to congestion. But at the same time, then there's also the thinking that, but they're going to make it safer because of the, you know, the connectedness of the autonomous vehicles and the taking the human error out of driving. So there are trade-offs on, you know, where you want to live. If you want to live downtown or closer to your work, you know, in many cases, you're going to pay a higher percentage of your income for housing than maybe you're comfortable paying. But, you know, right now, between housing and transportation, folks in Central Florida pay a significant portion of their income toward those two items.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I do know that for sure.
Yeah.
So, and the thing about it is, yeah, you'd like to maybe move closer to work, but it depends on how long you're going to stay at that particular job. You know, we're not a society that necessarily stays at a job for 20, 30 years like our parents did, you know, or something like that.
That's
I don't
right.
even think my parents did that. So, it, you know, it's probably unlikely that you're going to get someone to move every time they change a job. So, therefore, yeah, we're still going to have, I guess I would say, a lot of road congestion or whatnot, or just a lot of traffic or a lot of use of whatever mode of transportation we have just because of that, too. But
yeah.
I wanted to get back to your 2045 plan. Is it
uh-huh.
on track? Has it had to, I guess, be tweaked? Have there been deviations from that?
No real deviations, although we have, yeah, as I mentioned, we adopted it in December, and we have done one amendment to it since then, but it was a pretty innocent amendment. It was a requirement that the federal government, Federal Highway Administration, put on us for including what is our five-year plan, which we refer to as our Transportation Improvement Program, or our TIP. They wanted us to have that adopted into the plan for the first 5 years of the plan, so that the actual 2045 plan that we adopted really just goes from 2026 to 2045, and the current period up to 2026 is covered by the Transportation Improvement Program. So that was rolled in there. And then we also had some of the local governments, whether they were the cities or counties, that had projects in the plan that they decided maybe they wanted to fund using local funds, their own funds, for various reasons. And so we had to make that change. But other than that, you know, it's on track, but it's also only 8 months into the plan as well. So,
yeah.
But the you know, the plan that, that we adopted was just it's so much different than anything Metroplan has ever done, because it accounts for all of the money, and it programs all of the money on projects. And identifies those projects, whether they're complete streets projects or bicycle trail projects or sidewalk gap project, filling in the gaps on sidewalks. And so all of that is identified in the plan, and it needs to be because it kind of serves as the anchor for everything that's spent in the region from the federal and state government. So if it's not in the plan, it doesn't get funded until it gets into the plan. So we were very cautious about that. But we also looked at different scenarios in the plan of, you know, if technology, like the autonomous vehicles I was talking about a minute ago, if the saturation of those comes sooner than you know, we might anticipate, what is the impact of that? If folks for various reasons from South Florida or points along the coast move to inland Florida, into Central Florida, for example, because of flooding or something. What is the impact of that? What is the impact of another pandemic? And what if we lose population? So we looked at some different scenarios. And so it made the plan much more interesting, much more, I think, digestible by people who don't do this for a living. You know, it's much more understanding, and I think that they can look at it and feel like there's something in it for them.
So what is the, I guess, next point on the timeline for the plan? What is the next target?
Well, we update these by federal requirements every 5 years, and so that means mm-hmm. the next time we need to adopt a plan, which would be our 2050 plan, would be in December of 2025. And used to be that these, and this is a major effort, and it used to take about 3 years to do it. But we got this down to about 18 months, 15 months, or something like that now. So what we do now is especially with the new transportation bill, we'll be seeking funds, additional funds, to do the projects that are very, very popular and ones that we really want to get done. So we'll be seeking additional funding for those. And then in about 3 years, or so, we'll start cranking this all up again. And, of course, during that time, we'll be monitoring things like technology and electric vehicles and where charging stations need to be located and all of that. So it's the technology piece of this work has really made it interesting from the way transportation planning used to be done. So. But that's kind of the timeline. We'll just be monitoring and implementing the plan until we have to crank the machine back up again.
I had a couple of other questions for you, but we're running out of time.
Oh.
But well, one quick one, and then we'll go. Do you uh-huh. foresee is there a tax or some sort of charge that's going to be on electric charging stations, just as there is on gas?
We just had a discussion about that at a statewide organization meeting of MPOs last week, and there's mixed feelings on that. So I don't know what the legislature will do on that, but they need to find a way to get electric vehicles to pay for the damage and upkeep of the transportation system.
Gary Hudman of Metroplan Orlando, thank you very much for taking the time today, and hopefully you'll come back and give us an update. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank
it's
you.
Been fun. It's been fun.
Great. Thank you all for listening. Talk tomorrow. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God.